You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And it's that time once again to get the congregation back together here at the Church of the Lampshade. And I'm excited to be back together with y'all. I tell you, I expend like every bit of energy I have on this show when I do it. And by the end of the show, I'm exhausted. And I don't even think about a show until Friday rolls around when I sit down and do the Friday installment of Clown World in Review, a.k.a. Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. And then, you know, I've kind of rejuvenated myself and I'm ready for the next show come the following weekend, because I usually record the show on the weekend, by the way. And yeah, you know, and so I'm rejuvenated. I'm ready to go. We've got a lot to talk about. No exceptions. Every week we seem to find quite a bit to discuss. And we've got a lot to discuss, a lot to think about being these dark days. I get encouragement from this congregation, from all of you. Yes, I'm like a vampire. I'm just feeding off of your energy. And hopefully you're getting something out of it too. And speaking of which, those of you who choose to not be shy and pay those tithes and financially support the show, it is very much appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, you can find the information at the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. If you have a weird cryptocurrency, drop me an email. That's down there as well. I'll do my best to get you an address for that. And if you are a crypto supporter, don't be shy. If you want to drop a note, I'd be more than happy to read it on the air. It's kind of an honor system. I guess a liar could come along and say, I sent you some cryptocurrency. Here, read this. You know, and they didn't really send that. But I expect a certain amount of honor amongst the congregation. Like I said, we're gonna hit a lot of stuff this week. And so, last week we kind of ran exceptionally long, even for this show. I'm going to try to avoid that this week, so we're going to keep moving things right along. So we're going to go ahead and jump into the listener supporter mailbag. This is from Jackie. Dear Grandpa, such interesting times we're living in here in my state. The Department of Labor has lifted COVID restrictions 4 days ago on Wednesday. Sure glad it was about the virus and not the election. I think there's some irony, a sarcasm taking place here, just going out on a limb. But 99% of the sheeple are too stupid to realize the cage door is open. They just continue to walk around, masked up, wiping everything down. Sometimes, as a race, I think we're doomed. Anyway, grateful for the Church of Lampshade to keep me sane, and thank you for all of you that helping keep me sane. Believe it or not. You know, I think when they're lifting these doom flu restrictions, it's just kind of a test to see how well it's sticking. And these people are, I guess you would say, passing the test with flying colors. They're just continuing. They have surely true believers. You can tell by people's body language and the way they act. Like you go somewhere and you see the guy that walks up there with a mask clenched in his fist. And right before he walks through the door, because he knows he's got to wear it, he reluctantly shoves the thing on. And as soon as he comes out the door, he rips the damn thing off. You know, that guy isn't a true believer. He's just being forced to submit and go along. But then you have the true believers, and they're the people that, you know, you're sitting there at the stoplight and you look in the car next to you, and this stupid moron is sitting there in their car alone wearing their mask and gloves. They're a true believer. They believe in the doom flu narrative. And I just can't even understand what goes on in the mind of a person like that. Of course, then you have me. I don't wear the mask, period. You know, because most of the time they're bluffing when they say you got to wear a mask to come in the store. You just walk in that bastard without no damn mask, and most of them ain't going to say a damn thing to you. I bought me my Allah Akbar head wrap. You know, it looks like something straight up out of Hezbollah. And, you know, and I thought, because there's going to come a time. I got to go somewhere and I have no choice. I got to go somewhere and take care of business. And they're going to say, you can't come in here and take care of business without the mask on. You know, because going somewhere to eat, that isn't taking care of business. I go into a restaurant and it's happened exactly one time. I go into a restaurant and they say, oh, you got to have a mask. We won't serve you. I give them a polite, go screw yourself. And I go down the street to the place that they don't care. But, you know, say you got to go into somewhere and it's just something you have to do. Like, say, you know, you break your leg and they say, oh, well, you can't come into the doctor's office to get your leg set if you don't have the mask on. And I'm ready. I'm walking in that sumbitch full Hezbollah. And... But I haven't had the opportunity to do it yet because most of the time I've discovered virtually all of the time it's a bluff. They tell you you got to have the mask to come in here, but you walk in without that. So, bitch, they might kind of give you the stink eye out of the side of their eye, but nah, they ain't gonna say anything. No, the true believers, yes, they walk around truly wearing their masks like good goyim. You know, everybody gets rustled when they hear, you know, things like the Jews look at non-Jews as goyim cattle, you know, and sometimes, you know, like with stuff like this, as you've illustrated here, you know, I have to question if the Jews are incorrect about that. Maybe the goyim are, by and large, a lot like cattle. Mr. T, God bless you and pray for our people in these days to come. I never cease to do so. We're all in this boat together, even though we may be miles apart in different states and, for that matter, around the world. This show is global, by the way, for those of you who don't know. It's global, worldwide. I sometimes wonder if anybody, like, locally, like people like I know, maybe listen to the Church of the Lampshade and they just don't say anything. But either way, I know that people, I don't know, in probably like Helsinki or something, they listen to the Church of the Lampshade, and that's good enough to me. Keep on rocking here. Really enjoy your program and insight. Can you send a shout out to Dave in Ohio during the broadcast? Really appreciate it. And no, I appreciate it, Dave. And that's what we do. It's this part of, you know, some people, I've had people contact me and say, I don't know why you do like reading this listener mailbag, because this is a part of the fellowship. This is as much this part here where I read notes from you, the listeners. This is probably, if I was being 100% honest, this is probably more for my morale than y'all's. This is for me. So I remember that, you know, people are getting something out of this. I'm not just totally wasting my time. Grandpa Lampshade, great show with Sven on this post-theft attempt. Be well and God bless you. Nick, well, thank you very much. I always enjoy sitting down with Sven Longshanks. You know, I get asked time to time, when are you going to do more shows with other people? And, you know, I have a very short list of people I'll do show with because, you know, you never know. You get on, you sit down and do a show with somebody in good faith, and then next thing you know, you wake up a month or two later, and that person has gone off the freaking rails, and everybody's like, oh, you did a show with a guy, and he went nuts. You never know, you know? I mean, like it or not, just or not, I would say it's unjust. We're kind of we're viewed as the fringe, and being on the fringe, you tend to sometimes attract fringe people. So you have to be, I've learned that you have to be very careful about such things. Otherwise, you can get sucked in with fringe sort of stuff, fringy sort of stuff. Finally, from Andy Grandpa, thank you for continuing to provide this very important service. Well, you know, I appreciate it. And again, all of you are part of this. If nobody listened, if there was no back and forth, this would just, I don't know, I would have no choice but to feel like it was a bit of a pointless endeavor. So that wraps up the listener supporter mailbag. Again, I very much do appreciate any financial support. Send those tithes in. We don't have a big fancy building. I'm not here telling you I want a new private jet so I can send food aid to Africa like a televangelist would. But, yeah, you know, I probably actually, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I do appreciate it, and much appreciated on that front. Let's just keep on rocking here. So I was sitting here thinking, as always, there's, I usually don't know what the show's going to be about until I sit down. Some days that's probably more apparent than others. It's like you're just fumbling your way through. You're just guessing. That's right. That's right. We're just fly by the seat of our pants, Church of the Lampshade. That's the other thing that makes it difficult to do a show with other people, because they're used to somebody presenting, you know, like the day before you're supposed to go on together, you send them a volume of show notes, you know, and we're going to do this and then we'll discuss this topic. And when they do a show for the first time with myself, they're like, where are the show notes? And I've had people ask me, what about the show notes? It's like, there ain't none. You got to fly by the seat of your pants. And a lot of times people will be like uncomfortable with that. But then after they get rocking and see how this goes, they realize that, hey, this is, it's not that scary. But I'm sitting here thinking before doing the show, what does this all mean? You know, there's so much going on in this clown world that we live in. What does it all mean? That's one of the things we do with this show, is try to make sense of it. You know, and then whether we talk about the Christian specific segment later on that we do, or our just general sitting back and visiting before that. Now, it all works together to try to figure out what this all means. The big picture. Where are we going? As of my time sitting down here recording this show, no big moves on the Trump front. But I thought we'd think about it a little bit, and I'm not going to, this has just been talked about to death. All of you are probably sick of it, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time, I don't think, talking about it. But I thought we'd think about it in the terms of, you know, again, what does it all mean? I mean, Trump hasn't surrendered yet. He hasn't, which would be the official concession speech. And I'm not letting, I've advised people, don't let the lying media gaslight you. I mean, it's not over till it's over. But there are starting, I think, some slow hints that Trump is moving towards surrendering. For the one thing, you got people turning out for, you know, going to the streets, Trump supporters going to the streets. This happened after the election, within these past few weeks after the election. People have gone out into the street and they have held, you know, stop the steal and all of this. And where's Trump been? He's been like AWOL. You know, he should have been like on the streets, just like ad hoc, just showing up at these rallies unannounced and cheering the crowd on. And he's just simply been honestly absent, just quiet. He came out the other day and finally appeared in public to talk about what? A doom flu vaccine. Oh boy, a doom flu vaccine. That's what people are in the streets for. That's what people are concerned about. All of these Trump supporters are worried about. When are we, dang it, Mr. President, before you leave office, please, please, we need Pfizer's doom flu vaccine. I read an article the other day about the doom flu vaccine, and they were saying that you're actually going to have to take two shots. And I say going to have to, because, you know, they're going to try to make it mandatory, like the mask. They can stick that up their ass. I have no intention of taking a doom flu vaccine, by the way. But they are going to try to make that mandatory. But I was reading this article about the doom flu vaccine, and they said it's going to be two shots, 4 weeks apart. You have to take two shots, 4 weeks apart, to get your DNA officially rewritten. Congratulations on that. And they were talking about, you know, and you need to just be aware that it's going to hurt like hell. I mean, apparently more so than a regular shot. And they said, oh, and it's going to make you sick. I tell you, I'm wavering here. I'm sign me up for this. I want to get sick. Probably make you sicker taking the shot than the doom flu itself, because I've probably had it. You probably have it. I don't know, because I won't go get a test. I see these stories, you know, and I assume that the media lies all the time, but I mean, there has to be some truth somewhere in there, I suppose. But, you know, I see these stories and people are lined up, you know, like Jackie was saying, these are the people that go around and wear the mask even when they supposedly don't have to. And, you know, these people are lined up, you know, to go get their doom flu tests. They're going to take their COVID test. They want to find out. Why would you need to find out? If you have been exposed to it and you feel fine, why would you? I'm the type of person, I never understood people that go to the doctor for a checkup if they don't have to. Because would you take your car to the mechanic for a checkup? Because if you did, because who the hell can afford a new car? So you got some old car like the rest of it. You got some old hoopty. And you're going to take that thing. There's nothing wrong with it. Drives fine. Sounds fine. You're maintaining it. You're doing everything you can to maintain it. You take your car. But you got to take your car to the mechanic for a checkup. What? Well, nobody does that. Why? Because he's going to make a living. He's going to find something. You know, if you're getting up in age like me, I mean, hell, there's shit wrong with it. That's, you know, I mean, it's fine. It still works. But, you know, the shocks are bad, or, you know, front end is wore out, or you got some minor fuel leaks. Minor fuel leaks just from age. But I mean, the car's still drivable. It's still okay. But the mechanic, he's going to come out with this long list, because he got to find something to bill you with. We have to do state inspections here. I guess most places are like that. Even before you can get your tags, you got to go get a safety sticker. Well, they used to be a sticker. They used to put a little sticker on your windshield. They don't anymore. They just print out a thing, because you can't go get your license plate, your tags, unless you've had the safety inspection. And all the same, and it's like $7 or $14, whatever the hell it is. And, you know, I mean, the inspection station, which is a mechanic shop. They'll make anything off of that. But what they do try to do is find other shit wrong with your car so they can fix it. You know, if they can find something to fail the inspection, then you got to pay to have that fixed. And that's where they're hoping to make their money. But anyway, who goes to the doctor? But the people don't do that because they know they go to the mechanic for a checkup on their old car. The mechanic's going to find some shit wrong because he's trying to make a living. But yet, the doctor doesn't do the same thing. You think at my age, I couldn't go to the doctor, and he isn't going to try to find something wrong, you know, so he can bill it. Yeah, I don't, people act like these concepts that apply to other areas don't apply to things like doctors and medicine. Well, they wouldn't just find something wrong so they could bill it. They wouldn't run a bunch of tests just so they can bill it now, would they? Well, yes, they absolutely do. I mean, with this, it's the thing. I don't go to the doctor if I feel fine. And yet people will go line up for a COVID test. Why are you lining up for a COVID test? You think you're sick? No, don't think I'm sick. I feel fine. But I got to go check. I might have the doom flu. Yeah. And anyway, getting off track. So yeah, Trump comes out talking about the doom flu vaccine, which is going to be two shots. This article says it's going to be two shots. It's going to make you sick. And then they wrap the article up by saying, oh, and you're still going to have to social distance and wear masks. Why? Why are you taking the doom flu vaccine? It's going to change nothing. I guess Pfizer stock will go up. But aside from that, you have to think of there's like a behind the scenes bidding war. And Pfizer won the bidding war to get the doom flu vaccine contract so they can bump their stock prices. I'm not jaded. I'm realistic. People say I'm cynical. But no, it's just called experience. This is the way this utterly and corrupt system works. Trump comes out and he does a speech on the COVID vaccine. That in itself to me is a sign of he's finally warming up to just surrendering. If that happens, I think we need to set aside at least, say, a couple of weeks to a month to publicly mock and ridicule the whole Q phenomenon. Can we do that? Can we just take a couple of weeks to a month to mock the Q phenomenon for what it, because it would deserve mocking. Not necessarily the people that were just trying to, you know, I mean, rank and file believers, I guess, you know, you can't blame people for trying to find some sort of hope, you know, some sort of hope in life. They've already abandoned so many other things. So they're just clinging to the hope that things aren't as bad as they are. But welcome to reality. That things are as bad. Yes, welcome. The rest of us realized we're over the cliff in the clown car. We're just waiting for it to hit the bottom, see who crawls out of the wreckage. You know, the person that's in the back, the Q people are the people that have been buried under the back floorboard of the car, covering their eyes, saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Now they're finally having to realize, they're finally going to have to accept the reality of where we're at. The rest of us just been sitting here. Yeah, I don't know, cutting jokes, you know, waiting, because what else can you do? What else can you do? The clown car is going to crash, so we'll cut some jokes, laugh about what we're going to do when we crawl out of the wreckage at the bottom. The Q people are finally going to have to realize that, but we still have some mocking of the Q phenomena itself, you know, this promotion, you know, maybe it's petty, vindictive of me. There's this guy on Gab. He may not even still be on there, but his whole shtick was going around and telling people, you can't prove that Q is fake. If Trump surrenders and you wind up with a Biden, or should I say Harris administration, in a couple of months, it's petty, but I'm going to go look that guy up and say, we just proved that Q is fake. Just proved that Q is fake. I imagine he'll delete his account by then. So I don't know. I was thinking if, again, I mean, no, nothing's happened yet, or is it, nothing has happened as of the recording of the show. So always keep that in mind. I'm recording the show this week on Saturday. So, you know, you listen to the show on Tuesday and it's like, oh, Lampshade, I saw the, didn't you pay any attention? Why, on Monday morning, this happened. Now you look stupid. Well, no, my abilities of a prophet are somewhat limited, I'm afraid. So always bear that in mind if, like, some of the stuff doesn't jive up with something that just happened. I usually record on Saturdays, sometimes Sundays, but it's generally a weekend recording. So, yeah, take that into account. But I was thinking, if Trump does go ahead and surrender and concede, I was thinking, you know, would this, it would just be the perfect, I don't know, the perfect illustration of the Trump phenomenon as a whole, you know, all of this excitement, only in the end to really not deliver much of anything, you know? I mean, really, that would just be the perfect, I don't know, summary of the whole Trump administration. It'd just be, you know, he got elected on this big wave of populism and people would go on that Trump train. And I warned people back then, you know, not to expect all that much. And people took and bought into the God Emperor meme, which I always have just, I don't know, maybe because it seems like borderline, if not complete blasphemy to me. I've always cringed at that. But I did assume it was just a joke, a meme back during the 2016 election, you know. And but then he gets elected and it becomes apparent that people like actually started believing that was real. And then when that didn't happen, people got disappointed and downhearted. Oh, black-pilled, because the God Emperor didn't deliver what they thought he was going to do. And now with this just in-your-face fraud, I mean, that doesn't change the reality that this in-your-face fraud, and we're going to get into a little bit what that means, I think, big picture-wise. But this just in-your-face, just sloppy, shit-tier-level fraud. It's not even like, you know, this just shows you how much of a decline this country's in. Because we don't even get top-notch or even mid-level voter fraud anymore. We get, like, Africa-tier voter fraud. You know, it's just in your face. They don't even care that you know. And it doesn't matter. I mean, look, everybody, all these people online uncovering all of this voter fraud, and the media just says, oh, no proof. But yeah, there's proof. Look at this. All this online. Doesn't count. Conspiracy theory. We get Africa-tier, shit-tier voter fraud. We don't get, you know, a complicated scheme where they take stolen Social Security numbers and alter them and with a dead person and add this in and then voter registration and then they come. No, we just get... We get Africans in Pennsylvania sitting around hand-filling out ballots in front of the TV cameras. It doesn't even matter. We get... It's just become a shit tier country. But then we have interface voter fraud and all these people are ready. Stop the steal. I mean, people literally have gone out in the streets and Trump has talked hella shit. He's filed some lawsuits. That's another thing. And I've warned people both online and IRL. You know, Trump's got these lawsuits. He's got high-powered lawyers. I'm like, yep. And you have all of this evidence of voter fraud. He's got this. Y'all don't get it. He has got this. It's in-your-face voter fraud. There's no way he can lose in the courts. And I remind people, even IRL, I remind people not to forget we live in a post-legal society. If we did not live in a post-legal society, he's got a slam dunk case. There's massive amounts of voter fraud. It's shit-tier, African-tier voter fraud. It's not a complicated scheme. You just look, there it is. I mean, you know, oh, well, we have security footage of Africans sitting around filling ballots out by hand. We have voting machines that were done by a company that basically is financially tied to the Clinton Foundation that has a glitch that switches Trump votes to Biden votes. I mean, this is in your face shit tier fraud. If we didn't live in a post-legal society, I mean, this would be like immediately the courts would be like, whoa, we don't have enough jails to put all these assholes in. But we do. We live in a post-legal society. And I've warned people about this. They're all excited. You know, man, he's got a legal. This isn't over because he's got a great legal case. Well, he has a legal case if there was law and justice. But the courts don't serve that purpose. Just like the FBI does not serve the purpose of, you know, actually, like, they're part of the corrupt machine. Just to put it bluntly, I'm not going to say they don't, like, solve any crimes. But mostly they invent crimes to solve and make headlines with. And y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, oh, the FBI has busted this plot to do a terrorism. But then, you know, you dig into it and it's like, well, actually... they got their informants in there to gin up a plan of a terrorism. And when the people sitting around the table, you know, one idiot sat there and nodded his head like he agreed with it. And so they arrested him as being part of a terrorist plot that was actually designed by the FBI's informant himself. And then you get big headlines. They arrested usually white supremacists, but they've done the same game on the Muslims as well. So, you know, yeah, no, I mean, the justice system, the court system isn't about justice for damn sure. And it's really not even about law. They either make law up or just ignore it. It's just whatever they feel like at the time. So if we didn't live in a post-legal society, yes, absolutely. He's got a great case, but we do. Again, we are in the clown car. We are over the cliff. There's no, oh, somebody get on the brakes. You get on the brakes all you want to. You can scream and grip the wheel and slam on the brakes, but we're in free fall. The time to hit the brakes was before this bitch went over the cliff. But nobody listened. They wanted to vote for the guy with great hair. You know what I mean? It's not like we haven't had warnings. It's not like we haven't had people that warned us in the past. But nobody listened. You know? Yeah, we fought wars to destroy the people. This nation fought wars to destroy the people that were warning them. Yep, when Clinton went in there, when the Clinton ATF went in there and burned all the people up in Waco back in the 90s, it's kind of a warning, don't you think? It's kind of a sign. When they went in and to Ruby Ridge and just murdered Randy Weaver's wife and his kid, it's kind of a warning sign, don't you think? Maybe this thing isn't working the way it's supposed to. Or more upsetting, perhaps it is working the way it's supposed to. It's just not the way you think it's supposed to work. We do live in a post-legal society. So my enthusiasm, my excitement, has always been somewhat tempered by that. Yes, Trump has a hands-down case for this massive voter fraud. The evidence is widespread, but it's really going to matter. It's looking more and more like it may not. And again, I've been telling people, because the media has, they've been in gaslighting overdrive. But I'm starting to see what I see as signs from Trump himself that he's getting ready to throw the towel in. So, and again, it, just looking at the man's track record while he's been in office, talk hella shit, deliver very little. And, that's the reality. That's the reality of the whole thing. And doesn't it speak something? This tells you about the paranoid state, of mind of the oligarchy that rules this country. It really does, because, you look at Trump. What has Trump actually done in these past 4 years? He hasn't enacted any sort of radical agenda. I don't know if you could call not going around kicking off a whole bunch of new wars. That was once considered something sort of normal, but that's radical, I guess, in current clown world where the U.S. goes around picking wars it can't win all the time. It just doesn't matter how many times it's humiliated. Kicking off all kinds of wars. I don't know. But what has he actually done? What has he actually done that would really, really be that much different than if any other Republican was in office, as a placeholder the last 4 years? I would argue, really, when you get down to the nuts and bolts, he hadn't done a whole lot of anything. Really, hasn't done a whole lot of anything. You had, out and out, you had an open communist, you've had an open communist color revolution in the streets, complete with destruction of property, murders, violent mobs. And he's basically been like, well, these governors, these dang Democrat mayors, they just need to do something. Hadn't really done anything. That's the reality. But I think it speaks to the paranoid state of mind, because they've done everything they can to destroy the man. They've done everything. They've done this Africa tier fraud. They've even flushed down. They've flushed down every asset they had. The idea that people have that voting is, this voting thing is a legitimate system. And we'll get to that here in just a second. But they, Fox News, which was a good, which was a valuable asset not for the people, a valuable asset to the oligarchy, because normicons felt as though they had a news network they would tune into, and they've burned that. Because normicons, or all these normie Trump supporters, and then Fox News comes out and has now basically lined themselves up with CNN, MSNBC, and all the rest of them. And now, they're like abandoning it in droves. They went all in on this. And why? Why? Just for the simple thing, for all his faults, they couldn't control him. They didn't have the blackmail material. They don't have the video of him raping children or whatever the hell sort of blackmail material they have on these politicians to make sure they never step out of line. They don't have that. Doesn't matter that all he ever actually does is just really nothing. I mean, nothing spectacular. They just can't stand the idea, though, that they don't have him under their thumb. They don't have him under their absolute control. It doesn't matter that he doesn't actually do anything. It's just the fact they can't stand the idea that they don't have that control over him. They're such control freaks. They're so paranoid. They're so paranoid that they will go all in like this, even though, like, in reality, if Trump got a second term, what's he going to do? Build some more fence on the border or something, I guess. I don't know. Probably nothing. Probably give Israel more money. The same result as anybody else in office. You get the, doesn't matter. Team D, Team R, Israel gets more money. But it doesn't matter because they can't stand the idea that they didn't have control of him. So they go all in like this, like he's the Cheeto Hitler or whatever. Even though it's like you're looking at it, it's like, well, he hadn't really done anything. Nothing out of bounds of what any other Republican president would do. Who mocked Jeb Bush, but really, we didn't get much different than Jeb Bush. Now, for those who'd be like, well, yeah, I'm a lampshade before the election, you were saying you're voting for Trump. It's because it's a rallying cry. That's been the important thing. And again, I'm recording the show. This hasn't finished playing out, so bear with me. But it's been a rallying cry, and this thing, if we went out, for instance, a good illustration of this is if we got together and said, we're going to put every nationalist in America on the streets, you're going to get what? I mean, I think at Charlottesville, there was a couple thousand, it's nothing to sneeze at, but I mean, it's not huge. That was one gathering in one city. But yet with people riled up around this Africateer voting fraud, that's taken place, you're talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, potentially they could be rallied into the streets around this rallying cry over this corrupt system. That's nothing to sneeze at. That is a considerable thing, I think, to utilize this to say, hey, these people, they may be buying large CivNats, but I mean, it's something. I mean, it's something you can use. You got to work with what you have, not with what you want, because what you want, you generally don't have. If you had it, you wouldn't want it because you've already got it. You don't sit there and wish for things you already had. You don't need to. You already have that. So, rallying around this has been a great opportunity to, to get, a whole lot of potential people involved and understand the importance of nationalism and how corrupt this globalist system is that they're shoving down our throats. I don't know. It's amazing how clownish it is. The media used to stretch the truth, take a little bit of truth, at least a grain of truth, and then build this web of deceit around that. But now we're at the point they just make shit up, whole cloth. And say it's real, and it doesn't matter if everybody knows it's not real. I always think about, I was thinking the other day, and I think I pointed this out to somebody the other day. It's like I always think of that children's tale, about the emperor's new clothes. Everybody's familiar with that. If you're not, go look it up yourself. I'm not going to sit here and tell the tale. But, it's worse that our current society, if you can call it that, is more absurd than the tale of the emperor's new clothes. I remember being a little kid and reading the emperor's new clothes. Because we read back then, and books. And you sound like a fossil. you know, but I remember reading The Emperor's New Clothes, and, you know, it's a funny story because it's absurd. It's absurd. But reality of today is more absurd than The Emperor's New Clothes story. It really is. It's more absurd. Because if that story was taking place today, in today's society, the children at the end of the story that point and laugh and point out that the emperor's naked, you know, at the end of the story, the children are like, oh, he's naked, he ain't got no clothes on. And then everybody finally starts breaking and they have to kind of giggle and agree. And then, it, you know, oh, you know, and then they realize. And then the shyster tailors, because you know how those tailors are and they're. And their trickery. It's an anti-Taylor trope, I tell you. But now if that story played out in today's clown world, you know, the children would be seized and sent to a re-education camp for their anti-Taylor tropes and canards that they're putting out. Because, of course, the emperor has clothes on. That's a conspiracy theory to say the emperor is walking around naked. And, you know, they're going to do a full federal investigation of these some of these kids and their parents. What are their parents doing anyway? And the crowd would find out what the kids that were mocking the naked emperor, they'd find out what their parents did for a living and make sure that they got fired because they dared to say the emperor was walking around naked. And they'd give all their money to the tailors because, of course, they owe it to the tailors because of all the persecution that the tailors have faced over the centuries for no reason. If this goes forward, if Trump surrenders, and I'm really, I'm not letting the media gaslight me, but I just read the tea leaves. You know, because when things happen, everybody talks about them, you know? You get a big current event, and then everybody that does a show rushes out there and talks about it, and you get drowned out. You get drowned out in the sea of noise. See, I try to be in front of that. I talk about it before it happens. Of course, if it doesn't actually transpire, then I just look stupid. But I'm willing to roll the dice on that. I'm in front of the story because I talk about it before it actually happens. But I'm just reading the tea leaves. I think he's inching that way. Dude, I think he's inching that way. One thing about it, if Trump does go on and surrender after this massive, really obvious, we don't even warrant complicated fraud. We just get really shitty fraud. If that happens, you know, don't ever talk to me about voting again. And I don't think anybody should bother voting again. Why? Why should you vote? If you know now, seriously, if in 4 years, say this goes forward, Biden becomes president. In 4 years, Trump comes back and says, I'm running again, and everybody wants to get on that Trump train. I mean, why? Once you have the experience that all they're going to do is just make ballots up so that they win. I mean, why would you waste your time? One thing I say this time and again, but as you get older, if it's those of you that are younger, as you get older, you will become less and less tolerant of things that are a waste of time. Really, absolutely, you become intolerant, completely intolerant of wasting your time because you realize you don't have that much time. Time is very valuable. And, you know, voting is going to be a waste of time. Anybody that sees these people that have been going on about the Democrats and their voter fraud, because it's so shitty and in your face and just crude level voting fraud. Anybody that's done that, and then those same people come back in 4 years, are going to be like, get on the Trump train. We're going to put him over the top this time. Biden probably didn't get 20% of the vote. In reality, all the rest was fraud. What are you going to put him over the top this time? We're going to vote. I told somebody IRL just yesterday, and I said, you know, if they do get away with it, I'm going to take my voter card and run it through the paper shredder because I've always, you know, there, most of the time, for probably like a big majority of the time in my life, I've had the attitude that, you know, voting adds legitimacy to the system and you do your best way, because most of the time you get to choose between Al Gore or George W. Bush. Woo! You get to choose between Barack Obama and John McCain. I mean, really, we're not talking about revolutionary changes here. It's, you know, oligarch-controlled candidate A versus oligarch-controlled candidate B. There is, you know, that's it's all theater. and just voting, just by not voting, if everybody refused to take part, they can't fraud that, can they? It couldn't fraud that. They can fraud votes because everybody turned out in mass to vote for Trump. And they can fraud that and just switch the votes or just make up votes. But it's like, if 90% of the country comes back in 4 years and it's like, yeah, screw you, I'm not even bothering. I don't believe in the system. I'm checking out of the system. I'd be able to fraud that. I don't know. I guess maybe the media would be talking about 100% record turnout. But whatever. I don't know. They make everything else up. We're all going to die. If we don't die from the doom flu, we're going to die from the weather changing, you know, the climate, global warming, cooling cycle change thingy. And we dry out in the sea or whatever the hell. I don't know. The lies are so vast. You don't know what they are this week. But the people will check out. Anybody with any sense will, if they get away with this. They're actually burning probably the most valuable asset that they have, which is people still believing that the system works for them. And that's nothing to sneeze at. You might sit here and go, we've known that for a long time, but that doesn't matter. It's the perception among the general population. I've said this many times. This is why dictators will have an election where they win. You know, but the people still have to believe in the system at least enough to believe they're not just being, you know, brutally ruled over. They have to feel like they have some sort of say or, you know, some sort of ownership of the system that they live under. But this is going to be really, I mean, the only people who are going to believe in this are the hardcore commies. And though they're very vocal and they get amplified because they're the only ones allowed on platforms like Facebook and Twitter anymore, they're a small amount. You may think there's a whole lot of people that want communism in the country, but there's not. There's not. It's a small segment. They just want you to think there's a bunch of them. And they get their voices amplified. They get their voices amplified because they're on platforms like Twitter and Facebook. And the media will sit here and do whole news stories about people's tweets. This is something, I don't know. I remember when journalism at least had a facade of legitimacy. Now to watch the clown shit tier journalism that we have in this country. You see a whole news story and you read it and there's an opening paragraph. Twitter outraged about fill in the blank. And then the whole rest of the supposed news article is just screenshots of rando ass communist tweets. Oh, everybody's outraged. Well, communists are outraged, but they're always outraged about something. Really? I mean, how is that even news? This is the lazy shit tier journalism that we get in clown world. But the whole country doesn't want communism. But, you know, if people really soak this in, and, you know, if people really soak this in, and, you know, in 4 years, assuming the complete societal collapse hasn't happened by then, which that's, I wouldn't be willing to give odds one way or the other on that. But say it doesn't. Say we don't have complete implosion in the next 4 years. In 4 years, the Team R is going to be working just as hard as Team D to try to get things back on track. Who are you going to have running against Kamala Harris? Because no Biden in the last 4 years, probably in the last 6 months. He was always the front man for the Harris administration. Man doesn't know if he's horseback or foot. Well, who's Team R going to run? Lindsey Graham, the future president for the Team R. Yeah, I mean, really, they're going to run some establishment guy. They're going to have all their safeguards in place to make sure an outsider like Trump never gets to run again. So you're going to get a Lindsey Graham or a whoever the hell, just cardboard cutout Team R candidate. I mean, this is what you're going to get. And people, you know, and you're going to have those shills going out there going, this is the most important election ever. You won't be able to complain if you don't vote. You can't complain about the system if you don't vote because you didn't try to change it. Never mind, the voting has never changed anything in the system that I know of. People tried that 4 years ago, and the returns on investment have been pretty sparse, if you're being 100% honest about it. But if you wind up in 4 years with, like, Lindsey Graham running against Kamala Harris, and you have people going, we gotta get her out of there. After this experience to where they just can make the vote whatever the hell they want to. I mean, I don't know, you know. Like the old saying goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, I mean, that's, there's only so much slow learning can account for. At some point in time, you got to accept the reality. And the reality is that this system is not, it's doing what it's designed to do. But don't worry, we are headed for societal collapse. So things are going to get even more spicy. You know, I mean, just look forward to it. Who knows what's coming down the road? Mandatory doom flu vaccinations, COVID camps. They're going to come round you up. Maybe they will. Rephrase that differently. Perhaps they will come and round you up and put you in a camp, not for your political views, not for promoting the truth, not for being an actual practicing Christian, i.e. speaking the truth about Jesus Christ, these uncomfortable truths. No, it'll be because we got word you're COVID positive, but I never took a test. We're going to hold you down and shove a swab up your nose, maybe up your ass. And trust me, it's coming out positive. Now, if you want, we can forego the whole shoving the swab up your ass for the COVID test. And you just agree and sign this paper that says you're COVID positive. But you're going to be COVID positive regardless. We're going to have to put you in a camp to protect society because, you know, the doom flu. Or maybe it'll just be for being a COVID denier, you know? Maybe being a COVID denier will be enough to put you into a camp, keep you segregated from society. Who knows? But the collapse is coming. These things, I don't know. These things bear thinking about further what that looks like, and we don't have time to do that this week. That's something I'm thinking about. I'm tossing an idea. I'm going to do a little spoiler here, and I haven't talked to anybody else about it. But tossing around an idea of sitting down doing a show, and I'm going to do it. If I do it, I'll do a show with somebody else that's more knowledgeable in the things. But I think we need to really sit down. I'm thinking about sitting down and doing a show on really kind of hashing this out and getting an idea of what this looks like. Societal, because I believe societal collapse is absolutely whether Trump would have won, whether Trump comes out and somehow the Democrats get proven all this voter fraud, blah blah blah. Regardless, societal collapse is coming. I mean, this thing is so corrupt that it can't bear it anymore. It's riddled with corruption cancer, so it's going to die. And I think we need to sit around and kind of hash that out, what that winds up actually looking like. So anyway, I'll see as I get more time. Maybe we can make that happen. But we keep accelerating this path of societal collapse, so I may not have that much time. I don't know. But anyway, I do know this. Speaking of time, I've got to wrap this up. We got to get into the Christian-specific segment of the show. If you're not sticking around for that, you're missing out. But whatever. Do you? We're going to get in here and fill those pews. I'm going to get ready here. That's right. Time to get cozy and comfy here as we get into our Christian-specific segment here at the Church of the Lampshade. Seriously, though, I do have non-believers, and they tell me they like the Christian-specific segment. So if you're like a new listener and you're like, I ain't buying into that Christianity stuff, you may not want to tune out. It's insightful, nonetheless, but yeah, whatever. Anyway, so as is usual, you should see what counts for my show notes, by the way, because sometimes during the week I get ideas and I'm like, that's worth talking about on the show, and I'll jot them down. And it's the same with the Christian specific segment. You know, I'll kind of have a revelation, you know, I really see something clearly, and I'll jot that down. I'm going to talk about that. And I just got a big red X across my whole page here because I haven't talked about a dang thing that I jotted down during the week. Everything has just been completely ad hoc, just seat of the pants as we go. And the Christian specific segment this week is kind of pretty much the same thing. I was thinking about, you know, again, I always liken God's laws, you know, because people is like, there's so many, how do I know? You know, stay within the they're best illustrated by the natural order and how things work, because God made the natural order. I mean, even if you're a non-believer, most of you would agree that there is a natural order to things. I don't know how you skip the jump to if there's this like almost mathematical natural order to things. Math exists, you know, all of these things, somebody had to have put that together. But anyway, the natural order of things is, you know, if things fall within the bounds of the natural order, then you're pretty much probably well in line with God's intentions and God's laws. But I think about the natural order and I think about nature, you know, and how things in nature work. I really believe we as a people, especially specifically as white people, because of the way we're wired, but we're kind of, as a people meant to be like in contact with nature. People are meant to be in contact with nature and dealing with nature and working with nature. That is our natural state. And yet people are not in a natural state because people have been pushed into urban areas. And you may think, well, I voluntarily moved to the city, but you were pushed there. Why do you live in the city? I would be willing to bet those of you listening that are living in the city, y'all aren't like, y'all wake up, you're like, man, I really want to live in the city. I mean, maybe when you were young and dumb, because every young person that lives in a small town thinks they're going to move to the city because that represents something different to them. It represents like finally breaking free of their parents. And this will mean I am officially grown up for some reason. Don't, you know, young people thinking is a pretty minimal thing, but it gets young people get that in their mind. They live in a small town, a young person living in a small town, man, I'm going to move to the city. And the bigger the city, the more grown up they are. You know, if you grew up in a small town in Nebraska, you know, when I graduate high school, I'm going to Omaha. If you're really ambitious, I'm going to Los Angeles. I'm going to New York City and prostitute myself. I'll be officially grown up then. But for adult people, they live in the city because that's where they got to go to make a living, because your quality of life is dictated by how many trinkets you have and how much money you make. And so to make money, you've got to go live in a hellhole of the city and remove yourself from nature. This is how, I mean, I'm not saying they showed up and forced you at gunpoint to go live in the city. But, you know, if your choice is to make twice as much money and live in the city versus scratching by or not getting by at all and living in a rural setting, most people are going to live in the city. That's why you got all these people pushed into urban areas. It's like cattle, the Goyim cattle. You know, it's like, and again, this is an illustration. We're going to do illustrations. I'm going to say this right now. We're going to do illustrations. Just saying they're not exact. I'm not saying this is an exact representation. So don't be like trying to correct me. What about this part? But a good illustration is cattle. You know, and you look at cattle, they're serving their purpose. And a normal setting for cattle is they're out there in the field. You know, you look at a cattle and the cattle are out there in the pasture. They're grazing, having calves. I mean, yes, their purpose is ultimately to be food, but they're you know, as far as a cow could be happy, they're out there in the field grazing, waiting for the rancher to come by and dump some cow cubes out for them. dump some cows. Somebody told me the other day, they said, I saw a cow standing at the fence looking over, as if they want to be free. And I'm like, no, they're waiting for the rancher to come by and give them some cubes because they're good. Cattle cubes are like crack cocaine for cows. They really are. Those of you living in the city, y'all understand, cattle cubes are like crack. You know, they'd be in a field, knee deep in grass, more grazing than they could ever have. Big fat ass cattle out there. And when the rancher comes through, and they see him driving through, because people think, oh, they got to round up cattle. They get cowboys out there on horses, and they're like, yee-haw, because you got to do that. That's what they do on TV. Yee-haw, and they out there on their yee-haw horses, and they rounding up the cattle. Hell no, that ain't the way it works. The rancher goes out there on his four-wheeler, his utility vehicle, or just in the pickup with the windows up and the air conditioner on, and got this big box on the back of the truck, and he turns that mother... Ooh, well, it's got too spicy. He turns that thing on, and he shoots these cow cubes out. And then cows see that, and they're like, crack cubes. They're running, chasing that truck. They want them cubes. Oh, they love them cubes. They want them cubes. But yeah, this is the natural-ish state for cattle, chasing the crack cubes around. But they're in the field. They're living a happy life. Unless, you know, they get picked. Unless they get picked to be a hamburger or a steak. But that's a fulfillment. But not all of them do. You know, some of them get kept. you know, to be, you know, to keep having calves. You got a cow that's, you know, always throws good calves every year. They're not going to go get made into hamburger because they're making calves every year. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. This would be like a natural setting for cows out in the field. But you, they have these things called feedlots. And feedlots are a whole different thing. They take the cows and they're crammed into this condensed area. It's usually covered. Sometimes it's not. They get cram all these damn cattle into these pens where they can't move around. And cattle all jammed ass up in there. And they got these big feed troughs and they just feed them. Feed them. And it's like not grass, not even really hay. They just feed them like this, I don't know, conglomeration of grainish mush shit that'll make them put as much weight on as possible because they're sold by the pound. So they put as much weight on them as possible and they're stuffing this shit down their throat and they're all stepping on each other and they're wading knee deep in shit in these pens and stuff. And they feed them up and then they, you know, when they get them good and fed up, then they sell them to market so they can go be butchered. I don't like feedlots. I mean, I know they're a thing. I'm not sitting here officially condemning them, I guess, but they're not natural. It's not a natural state for a cow. It is a natural state for a cow to be food. That's why they're here. That's their purpose. They don't serve any other purpose on this earth but to be food. But it's one thing for them to be food while, you know, while they're waiting to be food. They're out there grazing around in a pasture somewhere, living a happy cow life until the day they get put in the trailer. It's another thing to cram them one on top of the other in a feedlot. What does this have to do with us? People in the city are basically feedlot cattle. They're not in a natural environment. You know, I talked last week about understanding the society that you're in. This is not a normal thing. What does this have to do? Why are you going on like this? And this is the Christian specific segment because you have to understand. The further removed you are from nature, the further removed you are from the natural order, the further removed you are from the natural order in nature, the further removed you are from God. It's hard to understand what God is doing. It's hard to understand, have any kind of connection, feel any kind of connection to the Lord when you're living in a concrete box, in a concrete landscape built by the hands of men. There's a designated purpose that they've shoved you in a feedlot. You're in the feedlot intentionally. It didn't just work out this way. I'm not saying there was a diabolical plan to push everybody in the cities. There may have been. Well, no, let me rephrase that. I'm not saying there was a diabolical plan by men to push everybody into the city, but there's definitely a diabolical plan. And I guarantee if you rooted it to the very top, you would find Satan himself. Because if Satan removes you from nature, removes you from the natural order, you're further removed from God. You're trying to understand something you can't understand because you're removed from it. You're not exposed to it. If you're exposed to something on a daily basis, you'll grow to understand it. But when you're removed from that, it's hard to understand because it becomes an abstract concept. Because you don't look at it, you're not experiencing it. Somebody's just telling you about it, but it's an abstract concept because you're not being exposed to it. Jesus, in his parables, over and over again would use like these agricultural parables. You know, the seed spread out and some falls on a hard path and some gets in good soil, some gets choked out by the thorns. And yes, a part of that is the fact that the people at the time were agrarian. You know, it was an agricultural society. It was based around basically agriculture and stuff. So, you know, this is what the people were familiar with. So we would speak in parables and illustrations that the people could understand because they were familiar with it. But I think also worth pointing out is the fact that these concepts, these nature is of the godly, is of God's design. So when he would speak in a parable about how seeds sprout, for instance, he is speaking of which God has created. Yes, he was speaking of things that the people could grasp and understand because the people were connected to nature at that time. They hadn't been herded into the feedlot. But he was also speaking of that which God had created. So it was kind of a two-prong approach. Speaking of the natural order, I was sitting here before doing the show, thinking and doing some praying and contemplating these things. And I do, I find nature to be, I wish I lived further out in nature than what I do. But nature is just such an immense, complicated thing that people don't give any thought to it. It works. You know, I mean, like when you drive your car, you don't think about who designed the fuel injection system and why it is that it gets just enough lubrication to where everything works. And you have all of these things and your injectors have to fire so many thousands of times, you know, in this time frame and the timing of the ignition. All of that all this complicated stuff has to work. You don't think about it. You just get in your car and turn the key and you go. Nature's like that. We take it for granted. It works. We don't think about the mechanics of it, but it's more complicated than the way your car works. Because your car, if you boil it down to it, nothing has actually been created. Men took things that God created, whether it's metals or substances, chemicals, whatever the case, and they manipulate those things around and construct something. It's like if you gave a kid a box full of Legos, and the kid takes the Legos and builds a little Lego house. Well, the kid didn't create the Legos. He did build a house out of the Legos, but he didn't create. You wouldn't look at that and say, wow, the kid created Legos. No, he created a house, but the fundamental things he built it out of were the Legos. Who built the Legos? That's kind of, I don't know, maybe not the bestest illustration, but you get the point. And you look at how nature functions, and it's so complicated because not only do you have all of these things working, together in such a complicated fashion, the things working are actually created. They're just other things put together, like a car or a Lego house. These are things that are actually created by God, and they have to do all of these things, and everything has to work. And we take it for granted because it just works. And you, as human beings on this earth, are a part of the natural order. One of the things I hate about environmentalism, because I believe in conservation, is I believe that, you know, it's spelled out quite clearly that we, being put here on this earth, we're supposed to take care of the planet. You know, I mean, greedy capitalist corporations that pollute the river, absolutely, it should be dealt with. I mean, I don't support that. I believe that it is a part of God's command that we are stewards of this earth and we have to take care of it. But environmentalism isn't about that. As environmentalism says that we aren't a part of nature. We aren't a part of the natural order. We are like this outside force. Like if people were wiped out, the planet would live in harmony. No, it would go to ruin because you have removed. Isn't it amazing? These people who will sit here and say, oh my gosh, if the three-toed tree lizard were to go extinct, nature would be put completely out of balance and the whole world could be doomed. If the, I don't know, Uzbekistan, I'm making this up, yes, the Uzbekistan brush rat goes extinct, we all follow it. Well, no, not really. But they will say, they will supposedly recognize the importance of everything that is a part of nature. And yet the environmentalist will sit here and say that man is not a part of nature. See, nature is this standalone thing, and we as people have intruded on the natural order. We have intruded our way into nature. And if people were to go extinct, the earth would just be a happy place where the lions wouldn't eat the sheep. And everything. No! The earth would go to complete and utter ruin. God made the earth, everything in it, and he made man. Man is a part of that, a part of this whole little scheme. If you look at seeds, just look at a seed of grain. And you say, yeah, okay. So you, if I handed you, so we're going to say wheat. If I handed you a handful of wheat and said, what's that? You'd say, oh, it's wheat. I'd be like, well, what do you do with it? And you'd be like, well, you put it in the ground. And it grows. Yeah, it just takes it for granted. You put it in the ground and it grows. You know, we're told in the Bible, you know, because Jesus pointed out that what gets planted in the ground, people, you know, your body, it's not what rises up. Because, the Pharisees tried to get him with the whole, you know, well, the man dies and his brother marries his wife and then he dies and the other brother marries the wife and he dies and all the brothers die and then finally the wife dies. Whose wife is she? And Jesus is like, ain't no marriage in the spiritual realm. Once you leave this realm, you know, you're not walking around in a body. What gets planted like a grain of like a, this piece of grain, what gets planted, a big giant oat seed or wheat seed doesn't come up out of the ground. A wheat plant comes up out of the ground. If you looked at it, you didn't have any idea where it came from, and you looked at this wheat, you would be like, well, you wouldn't guess that it came from this little grain because it doesn't look anything like it. It's like when you see insects that do metamorphosis, they make a cocoon, and what comes out of there don't look like no caterpillar. It's this bug that flies. Something different comes out, and this is the way it works for you. In this world, when you leave this world, something different comes out. Once you get planted in the dirt, now, this body becomes irrelevant. What's coming out after your death is what matters. I was thinking about this in the context of seed. I'm in and out of going here with this because it's kind of a difficult thing to illustrate. And again, it's an illustration. I'm not saying it's an exact representation because somebody will be like, I got a PhD in horticulture and you didn't mention the name of this was. Just know the general function of it because you put the seed in the ground. Okay, well, you know, what keeps a plant alive? Sunlight. Right? Photosynthesis. Even I know that. Back when, because, you know, I went to school when they did actually teach some of these basic things instead of, you know, Martin Luther King or the Holocaust 7 days or 5 days a week or whatever the school year. But photosynthesis, that's what paths are. Plant survives. And photosynthesis, the plant breathes in, you know, as part of it. It breathes in the carbon dioxide and emits oxygen. That deadly carbon dioxide that's going to kill us by changing the weather, by the way. But if plants survive by photosynthesis, then how does grain survive? You ever thought of that? How does grain survive? You have grain and it sits dormant, you know, and then you plant it in the ground and it comes up. But it only comes up if all of the conditions are right. If you plant the grain too deep, it'll sprout down there. And your grain of wheat tries to sprout, but it can't make it up to the light. It's buried too deep. And once it sprouts up and it can't find any sunlight, it can't feed off of that, and it dies. Sometimes you could take your grain of wheat and you can plant it in the ground, and that grain of wheat will get just a little bit of moisture, and it'll sprout. But then it doesn't get any enough moisture to keep going, and it withers and dies. It's kind of like that with your spiritual understanding. People get a little bit of the truth, a little bit of the gospel, a little bit of the understanding of how God works and salvation in Christ, and they get excited, like that wheat that gets a little bit of moisture and pops and starts to grow, but they don't follow through with it. It becomes a passing fad. They don't think about it, and they don't really pursue it because it's something you have to pursue. If you really want to know God and you want to try to really be like, take your salvation seriously and become something with it, even do something with it, grow. If you want to grow, it requires effort. You have to try to make time to pray. You have to try to make time to understand the scriptures. You have to try to make time to really try to listen and understand what these things mean and get closer to God. But when you herd it into a city, apart from nature, it's harder to do because you're busy. You got to think, it happens to all of us. I get busy. And my daily prayer time turns into like a minute or two of, you know, thank you, God, for everything you do. Give me strength to do what I need to do. Amen. And I got to go. Got things to do. You have got to continue to receive the water, the nourishment, so that you can reach the sunlight and really start to grow. It's a very complicated process. You know, in a grain of, say, a grain of wheat, you know, you've got the germ in there, and that's like the heart of the wheat, because the shell would be like your body. The shell is like your body, and it just carries everything around. But then you got your soul in there, you know, and your body is just that shell. It's disposable. You see, the shell that you look at, if you're looking at a grain of wheat or oats, whatever the case may be, you look at that seed, and it's disposable. That thing is not going to do anything. All its only purpose is a case holding what's inside together. And when everything works, when that sprouts under the ground, it doesn't have any sunlight, but there's stuff inside that seed that the germ actually eats. It actually feeds on. And that's what it feeds on to live long enough until it can grow up and pop out and get that sunlight. And then it really starts to grow. It's kind of like us again, as spiritual beings. These things can be reflected in nature if you look for it. I think a lot of people, they get this notion that when you die and you're a Christian believer, you're going to go to the kingdom of God, and it's going to be like everything stops. You know, you're going to die, going to go to the kingdom of God, then everything stops. It's like you get an eternal vacation. Do you ever think of it like that? Because I have. I thought of that. Because you get so burdened with the crap of this world, you're like, I'm ready to go on vacation. Take me now, Jesus. And they think that when they go to the kingdom of God, it's going to be an eternal vacation. But you know, this time on this earth is just your time to sprout. You know, I've often thought of this life as like going to high school and you're just trying to get, you know, just graduate. So you can graduate to the kingdom of God. But that's not the end of it. This is just to get you. Your time on this earth is just for you to spiritually sprout. And it seems like it's this big ordeal, because it is. It's a big ordeal for a grain of wheat to sprout. A lot of stuff has to happen, and everything has to happen just right. It has to be planted at the right depth. It has to receive the right amount of moisture. It has to receive sunlight when it does sprout and get above the ground. But when you reach the kingdom of God, that's when the growing begins. That's when you finally have reached out and you've hit the sunlight. You've left the shell behind, because the seed, that seed casing is irrelevant. It rots off. You grow roots then, and then you're out here in the sun. You're out here now. You could do what you're intended to do. And that's how I believe it works for us. This life is just the process of the grain sprouting. And everything has to happen. You want to do everything you can to make that happen correctly. And it is a complicated process. Sometimes you plant these seeds and bugs come along. Bugs come along and get in there. You know, you get weevils will come in and they drill a little hole in the casing. They get inside of the casing and you have to look for it. They work their way inside of that grain. And what they do is they eat out that part that the germ feeds on while it's trying to get up to the, so it can't ever, it doesn't have anything. The germ of the seed was your soul. It never has anything to feed on. And when the sword of truth, when the gospel of Christ gets stolen away from you, your soul never has anything to feed on. So it never gets a chance to sprout and grow and reach the sunlight. When seeds get planted, there is like this huge insurmountable thing. It's what is amazing that the modern cut church tries to preach this version like everybody just waltzes into the kingdom of God. And it's not the way it works. Is this, there's this whole array of things of this world that are stacked against most people making it. Most people just get choked out. Weevils get in there and eat out the gospel so that people pay no mind, don't try to have any practical application of it in their lives. They're too busy. Got to make that next car payment. Got to do this. Got to do that. Got to what about buying new stuff? What about impressing the neighbors? What about dealing with this huge crisis at work that I won't remember a year from now, but right now I'm going to stress out and give myself a heart attack over it because it's such a huge deal. All of these things choke out what your spirit, what your soul needs to feed on so that it can eventually sprout and grow. There is a vast array of things to keep it from happening. Just as when you plant wheat or any other kind of grain, there's these insurmountable odds. Some of the seeds just defective. It just may not work. Some of it will try to sprout, but it just can't get it done. It gets choked out. Sometimes people get bugs worked into their soul and it eats them up from the inside out, and they never get a chance to sprout and grow. The point here, I suppose, is if you are a Christian believer and you're pursuing your faith and you're doing your best, look, we're not all going to get it right all the time, and all that. But if you're a Christian believer, And you're pursuing your faith, you're really trying to understand the way the Lord works, what the Lord's doing, so that you can try to play whatever role you can. You know, this is a great thing. It's not something to be taken for granted. Understand, there's a huge amount. It's not meant to be easy. Again, that's one of the things that wears me out about the modern cut church that tries to present this as some easy thing. You say the magic phrase, you get into the kingdom of God, voila, it's done, it's easy. And that cheapens the price paid. It cheapens what God has done to give you this chance to sprout. It makes it a cheap and easy thing when there's nothing cheap and easy about it. A price was paid just to give you the opportunity. But that doesn't mean that it's automatic. You have to pursue it. You have to grow. I'm not saying you get in by your actions. I'm saying you have to grow. Your point is to grow. If you just stay a seed until you wither up and die, you're never going to grow. You're never going to shoot up out of the ground to where you can receive that light. The things of this world will just eat you up. The concerns of this world will just tear you down and eat at you and prevent you from growing. As we wrap up, I just thought, again, this week we've kind of done something different than what we kind of fell into a routine, you know, and we'd go in some, and we'll do that. And I'm not abandoning that. I just, you know, normally we'll sit here and, you know, find some verse of scripture and talk about what that means and try to understand God, because that's an important thing of our growth, of what we try to do. But I was considering before doing the show how far removed people have become from the natural order, from what God has created, from nature itself. And I don't understand, there's all these examples where you can learn about God by what he has created. You know, if you look at a building, you can get something out of, you know, what type of person the architect is. If you look at this big, huge, ugly monstrosity, and it has like a, it's just, you know, have you ever looked at things like that? You look at a building and you're just, there's something off-putting about the design. It's unimaginative. It's ugly. It has ugly lines. It's just, there's something about it on a spiritual level almost offends you just to look at this building. You can tell something about the architect that designed that by looking at it. If you look at, like, say, an ancient cathedral and it's this beautiful, you know, ornate thing, it tells you something about the people that built that, the people that designed that. You can understand something, you feel a connection about that. Likewise, if you see a big, hideous monstrosity of a modern building, and you would say, man, you know, it's a reflection of a huge, ugly monstrosity of what passes as a society today. Likewise, you could look at nature and what God himself has designed, and you can understand, at least get a feeling for who, what you're dealing with, which is what we all strive for, to understand who, what we're dealing with when it comes to dealing with God. Because he's so far, it's so hard to really grasp while we're in this, while we're in the seed form here, it's hard to really grasp and understand it. And once we get into the kingdom of God, we've sprouted, then we get to soak up the light, then we really get to start understanding. Then we really start to learn, and then we understand the context of things, and we get really get to see the big picture. We get to shoot up. All we're trying to do in this life is just sprout. And there's a lot of things to work to try to keep that from happening. It's a difficult process, and it's part of the design. It is a difficult process, but it is a process worth undertaking. This is your stated reason for being here. And again, I just thought, you know, knowing that so many people have been pushed into these feedlots, which we call cities, and have no idea how, never even give a second thought to how nature functions or how man fits in as a part of nature and how all these things. I thought it might be interesting to sit here this week and just discuss it a little bit. You know, if you're not familiar with how all of these things work so that we can survive, how these things, these complicated mechanisms. Again, it's just, being is an example that God exists. You know, people sit there and say, well, I just want some proof that God exists. How can you look at all of the complicated things? It's simple as planting a grain of wheat and it actually sprouts. When you start understanding some of the mechanics of how that works, it's just amazing. All of the things that work together and put together, that doesn't happen by chance. And the more you understand, you start trying to understand, well, who designed it? What type of entity is this? And that is ultimately our goal. You're trying to understand the entity that made these things, that created these things, that made this immense complex design that we couldn't even begin to fathom. As we struggle and we walk and try to learn about God, we can do that by learning, by observing what he has created. We're going to wrap up. We need to get wrapped up here because we're not going to go super long like we did last week. We're just going our normal amount of long. But hopefully you got something out of the show this week. It's always my intention. It's never my intention to have a crap show. I never half half-ass these things, you know? I really do. I mean, some of you listen to a Lampshade show and you're like, this show wasn't that great. You know, well, I'm sorry, but it's not intentional. I don't ever phone the show in. I do always try to put the best effort I can in there. And my hope is always that you get something out of it. And, you know, that's what makes it worthwhile doing. And so, anyway, we are going to wrap up. A final thank you once again to those. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Your financial support is very much appreciated. And I very much appreciate all of you who get together here for the congregation at the Church of the Lampshade.